No, maybe not. I'm Eric McGarity. I'm dyslexic. That's why I'm here today. I'm really glad you guys invited me, by the way. I think that it's extremely important that dyslexics are actually involved in the conversation. And Jim, I'm happy to have you on the board as a fellow team member, right? So welcome to the club. I think that if we're not involving dyslexics in the conversation, we're really missing something truly important. And so what I want to talk today about, I want to really change the game. I want to talk philosophy with you guys for a minute. I want to say, what is the philosophy? What is the goal? What are we trying to achieve here? And so I'm going to start, and I'm going to pick on you a little bit with the title of this committee. So Interim Committee on Dyslexia and Related Disorders. I don't think that we should use the word disorders. I think that's an inappropriate term. Dyslexia is not a disorder, you know. If I were sitting here and I were blind, for instance, would you say, there's a man with a disorder? You know, if I were in a wheelchair, would you say, there's a man with a disorder? Disorder is something that you go and, you know, it indicates that something's wrong in the mind, maybe. I don't think that's an appropriate way to see dyslexia. So I'll start there. I also want to talk a little more about language. I think that the language and the terms that we use, we're talking about reading, right? Potentially, we're talking about reading. So I think language is a very interesting place to start here. So the language, one word that comes up, it's insidious, it's used frequently, particularly by people who aren't educated in this, is laziness, this concept of laziness and a relationship between laziness and learning disabilities. So I'll use myself as an example. I'll introduce myself here. So as I mentioned, my name's Eric McGarity. I'm dyslexic. I've never read a book in my entire life. I struggle to read. I read very slowly. However, I graduated from college with honors, and I went to graduate school after that. I now own my own company, and I have a dozen people working for me. So am I lazy? Right? So the relationship needs to be broken between the concept of reading and laziness. And we need to open up, and one of the things I'm going to talk about a lot is this idea of giving people tools to succeed. And some of these tools, people say, well, that's a shortcut, or that's a lazy thing. It's not a lazy thing. It's a necessary part. And I'll talk a lot more about that here in a second. So let's get to that. It's the idea of ramps. I think that's another important word. Let's use that word, ramps. So if, once again, the example, if I were in a wheelchair and I got to the front of a building and had many steps, right, and the person with the wheelchair goes up to it, what do you say? Go up the stairs, climb the stairs, but get on up there. No, we build them a ramp, right? We build them a ramp. So I think that's what's important. That's what we need to be talking about here, is building ramps in people's lives to build success, you know. And a lot of what we've heard so far, we've heard some really wonderful points. Some of my friends, I know quite a few of these people. I know a few of you as well. Some wonderful points, but all the focus has been on teaching reading, you know, overcoming and kind of rehabilitating. Where's the focus on ramps? When are we going to get to the part of providing tools and accessibility for lifelong success? That's what I want to know, because that's really where we need to get to. And that's why I said I wanted to talk a bit about philosophy. The philosophy change is, what's the end goal? The end goal is to have a successful, independent person after the educational process. Not somebody that can read. I don't give a hoot if you can read in the end. I still don't read. Who cares? You know, I'm very successful. I lead a happy life. Reading is not the goal. Reading is not what I accomplished, right? That's a philosophy change that I think we need to get to. Now, with that said, I want to be careful. I'm not saying that it's not important to teach reading skills. Obviously it is. Early intervention, the question came up, when's the right time to diagnose? Earlier. The earlier, the better. You know, if we can diagnose them in kindergarten, let's go for it. You know, I was diagnosed at the age of 5. It was a blessing. I was lucky to be early, you know, early detection. That helped a lot. Now, did I get appropriate, I loved what you said earlier, I can't use your words exactly, but, you know, aggressive, direct reading intervention, did I get that right away? No. If I had it, would it have made it different? Would I be a stronger reader today? Probably so. So there is a real, real value to early intervention and aggressive, on-point reading intervention through language therapy techniques like Orton-Gillingham and multisensory techniques and some of the other things we've, you know, scratched on just a little bit here today. But in the end, what we're leading towards is lifelong success. I'll give you another example. Back to the person in a wheelchair. Let's say that I had a, or somebody had a severe spinal injury. After that injury, for the first year of their life, or the first year after that, they do maybe intensive physical therapy, right? And I would relate that to this same concept. But after that first year, what is the goal? The goal is to get this person to be capable of living successfully independently, giving them the appropriate chair that meets their physical abilities, making modifications to the home so they can access the home and perform daily functions, right? I mean, that becomes a goal. So certainly by fourth, fifth grade, maybe earlier, the focus needs to turn from let's teach them how to read all day, let's rehabilitate this kid, to let's give this kid the tools of success. And I take that a step further. I think giving tools that help that student function independently should be introduced immediately, absolutely immediately. And so that means teaching auditorily. It means using kinesthetic learning. That means giving them access to technologies and audiobooks. These are the tools that are necessary that I use on a daily basis to be a successful independent person, right? I'll bring up some facts and figures that I didn't cite particularly well because it's not my strong suit. But these are real numbers. I just was thinking about that. 25 to 40% of people on welfare have a learning disability. A large majority, and I've read several different articles and the statistics vary, but a large majority of our prison population is diagnosed with a learning disability. 43% of dyslexics will drop out of college in comparison to 33% of blind individuals, right? I think that's an interesting point. I bring this up to point out that solving this problem is not only going to solve a social problem, it will solve a large economic problem. These people who have had less fortunate outcomes, in many cases, were because they weren't properly prepared for adult life. And what I'm interested is getting adults who can lead successful independent lives. Just as, and to do that, we have to start with the kids, obviously. That's why we talk a lot about kids. But having successful independent adults is a critical part of that.
So how did you get through college? Did you tape lectures?
No, not particularly.
Remember, you went to class, heard a lecture, remembered it?
Jim does it, actually. I'll tell you what Jim does. I noticed this earlier. So when Jim liked a point and he liked what the person said, you didn't particularly ask a question, you just summarized what they said. And you say, did I summarize that right? Am I right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay, so I do the exact same thing. If I hear something that I know I need to remember, I'll ask a question, I'll frame a question even if I don't need to ask a question, but I'll repeat it back. And that way I'm teaching them. And when I say it, I remember it. So I have a decent auditory memory, so I hear it pretty well the first time. But if I say it, I really remember it. So I don't take notes and I don't record anything. I don't have time to go back and listen again. But I remember it because I said it. And so that's my technique.
In the course of getting a college degree, 120 credit hours, and say taking 4 3-hour courses or 5 3-hour courses in a given semester, you're sitting there 3 times a week for an hour, and having been through college myself, you don't have that opportunity in the classroom to do that
right.
With every lecture.
Right. I sometimes would do that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So that's the way you...
So a couple of things I did. For myself, I went to a small private college, which served me the luxury of being able to talk to the professor and attend student classroom. I would also commonly go up to the professor and engage in conversation afterwards. And in that conversation, in that dialogue, is where 90% of my learning took place. And even when I later went to graduate school, I went to University of North Texas, obviously a much larger school. If I were in a larger classroom environment, I would then go and make a connection with the professor after class.
But
component of that.
One tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some folks who have kids that have dyslexia, they can get the best of everything. They're still not going to be able to read.
Right.
They'll improve, perhaps, but not read well enough. So then at what point, you know, what do you do for them? I guess what you're saying is the ramp then is audio.
Let's go over that. That's a great question. That's why I have my computer sitting here, actually. So,
what are you reading on a computer?
Everything.
Okay.
Everything.
How are you, if you don't read, how do you do that?
All right. So I use what's called text-to-speech technology to function on a daily basis. And so I'm gonna play it here for you because I think this is interesting. I don't know if you've been exposed to this before, but this allows me. And I can control the speed of the text. So I'm going to play it first at a normal reading speed, which is not the speed I listen to, but it'll probably be easier for you to listen to since you haven't heard this before.
The attributes of self-awareness, perseverance, proactivity, emotional stability, goal setting, and the use of support systems were more powerful predictors of success and numerous other variables, including IQ, academic achievement, life stressors, age, gender, SES socioeconomic status, and ethnicity, and many other variables.
So with the use of the computer in a classroom environment, after class, wherever it's necessary, I can now read just like anybody else. You know, I can now get information in my own way, you know, at my own pace. So this is a ramp. You know, with this computer, I can fully integrate with the society. Now, here's another thing that I do commonly. I remember, okay, so I finished graduate school. First 2 years out of graduate school, my goal was to be a college professor. So that's what I did. I went on and taught. How many college professors don't read, right? So, but I had a really big challenge. I thought, well, first off, how do I grade all these papers? I want the students to write papers. And I don't want to do a bunch of multiple choice tests. I really want to see critical thinking and be able to judge that. So I required that all my students email me their papers. I would accept no written paper. And I'd have students the day of the due date come in and try to hand me super. I was like, I won't even touch it. You know, they'd hand it, get it away. And they'd have to email it to me, and then I could listen to it. So the same thing could be said as a student. You know, never hand an LD student a handout that you could give them digitally so that they could hear it. And it could be on the thumbnail drive that she was, you know, showing earlier on a CD. It could be through email. I don't care what the means
what did
is.
You do for tests? You took a test.
In high school, middle school, I was always read to me. I had to have a reader. And only later in life did I become adept at this. If I had have had this earlier, I would have used this.
Okay, so we're going to compile a report.
Yeah. Good. Good.
How will you synthesize that information? That's why I read it to you?
No, I hope you email it to me.
Well, okay. Okay. And that'll read it to you.
That'll read it to me. Okay. That's right. Yeah. And then I'll respond. And in fact, I can edit myself through this because I can type and then I can listen to what I just typed. And then by listening, I can hear my mistakes that I wouldn't be able to see. And so commonly I'll type it out and it'll have tons of mistakes, but I can hear them and I go back and correct them. It's a somewhat laborious process. I can also speak to the computer and it can type out what I say. And so that then avoids that.
Okay, now you're college educated and white collar. This is a great story. I love this kind of thing. What about the blue collar community out there?
Yeah. Well, in an academic environment, the same. I think that the school should provide them with this technology.
So is this conducive to auto mechanics or plumbing or?
Why not?
Electrician? Well, I'm asking.
I would think so. In fact, on the go, this becomes a mobile substitute for this. So in a pinch, this can spell for me and read to me. I have a mobile app that cost me $4, I believe, that'll read out all my emails aloud. And I also have the Google app, which is free, and I can speak to it. I also have the Dragon Dictate app, which I think was 99 cents. And I can speak to either of those, and it can type out what I say. So in a pinch, I can use this iPhone and an Android. Any smartphone would do all the same things to spell and to read. And so when in a situation where I have to do paperwork, for instance, this is what I do. I want to mention another technology that's really exciting. Recently, Intel launched a new product called the Intel Health Reader. It's a device about this big. It's about the size of a really small computer, for instance. It's a handheld device. You can carry it around with you. And you could photograph a sheet of paper just like that, and it would read it out loud to me instantly. It's a fantastic device, and that overcomes a classroom environment situation where I'm given a handout that then I can't read, right? So now I have a device that can read to me. In a few years, my cell phone will do the same thing, I'm sure.
What do you, since you run a company, you have to look at financial reports. How do you handle numbers?
I can see numbers fine. Yeah.
You look at a spreadsheet of numbers, that's different than the...
It is. In fact, I can see letters just fine. So I think that's an important thing to distinguish between vision and comprehension. So I can visually see the text, R-A-T-H-E-R, but I'm not sure what that word means or what how you put those letters together into a word. And that was what she was earlier talking about is phonological awareness. The awareness, the connection between the visual and what that visual means as a sound is difficult for me. So I have to use what's called word attack skills, which someone else already talked about, and go r-a-t-h-e-r, and then I can read it's rather, you know. But as a sight word, I don't know what it is. So reading becomes a mental obstacle course. Some people say, well, you can read because I could probably read a short amount. But by the time I get through with a sentence or two, I'm so drained that I'm done, I'm cooked.
Some financial reports have a certain amount of prose with them. What do you do that?
I require them digitally.
You look at that and then you look at them.
Yeah, I read the written part with the computer and then I, you know, look at the math. But I enjoy math. I'm actually quite good at math, so I enjoy that part of it.
Do you communicate by dictating? If you need to write me a letter, are you going to email me, or how do you email me?
I generally email my own emails, and I'll type it out and listen to it and retype it. But I spend about four or five times as long to type the same amount of information.
Can you, I mean, there's technology now where you can, I use it in my medical office.
To dictate it. Yes. Right. Yeah, I have that as well. I use it some. I've just kind of gotten adapted to the typing and editing process.
Yeah, it's not flawless, and sometimes red comes out R-E-A-D or R-E-D. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always put things in context. So I'm looking at the screen as I dictate it.
Just to make sure.
Yeah, things can come out. Although, you know, we spend hours, which you wouldn't be able to do, but reading medical reports into the computer, or the computer flashed them up. We read them off the computer, so the computer learned how we said
right
certain things.
That's why I don't use that software a lot, actually, because it requires reading to train it. I think it's an inherent flaw in the software. And if anybody from Dragon ever wants to work with me, I'd be happy to be a consultant for them and fix this problem.
Yeah. Where's
the Dragon? Yeah, it makes me so mad. Because it's a flaw in the system, you know?
Yeah, maybe we're on to something.
Yeah.
There's a great story. Really great. Now, where do you
live? Here in Dallas.
Here in Dallas.
Yeah.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah, sure.
Did you go through public schools here in Dallas?
I did not. I did not.
You grew up here in Dallas?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to go to the Shelton School.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
So at what age were you identified?
Five. Okay. Which was very fortunate. Now, at the time, I lived near Austin in Georgetown, and I did go to public school there for... So I did kindergarten, and then I was held back and did kindergarten twice. And then I went to Montessori for 1 year, and then I went to public school for the first two. And then I went to Winston School here in Dallas, and then I went to Shelton School through eighth grade, and then Dallas Academy for high school, all in the Dallas area.
Well, congratulations on your success.
Thank you. I want to make one other point that I failed to mention was audiobooks is an incredibly important part of my life. A couple good companies out there, Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, offers audiobooks, and also the Library of Congress, and they have a branch here in Austin that offers audiobooks. You know, I say I've never read a book, but I've listened to probably thousands at this point. I read them constantly.
People are downloading books now, like Kindle and mm-hmm. various products, so you can download it there.
I believe so. I actually haven't ever downloaded a book, but I believe I could listen to it, yeah.
Right.
Right.
Most people do Kindle or buy it to read it.
To read it. But it's digitally formatted. I would assume that it would be able to read it out loud. Yeah.
I have a couple questions. First is, thank you for everyone to testify. Is there a way that you could create some specific actionable things that we that you might suggest, like we had from, Dr. Simmons gave us a list of actionables.
Yeah.
I think that'd be very helpful for us as to which branch you think might be, like, provide each school district the ability to get hold of this software or something like that, which would be helpful to us.
I'd be happy to do that.
Also, the other question was the, that's the one.
Good. I'd be happy to do that. I'll follow up after this meeting with a written document.
Members, any other questions?
Oh, thanks. That's great.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time.